Welcome to another episode of In the Pen, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I am your host, Callan Elsliger, joined as always by my friends Rick Graham and Jake Crumpler. And guys, let's just say that I'm liking you more than I'm liking the Toronto Blue Jays today. How you guys doing?
Yeah, it's that's been a feisty series, to say the least, between your guys, the Yankees, and the Blue Jays. It's, you know, becoming a new rivalry within that division. Yeah.
I really appreciate that compliment. You know, I knew it was hard for you to put us over the rival Blue Jays. You know, it took me a few weeks of talking to you guys to put you guys over the Dodgers, but you know, we got there. So I'm glad we eventually surpassed your favor for the Blue Jays.
Yes, I think we've done enough shows where you guys can get to that level. But on a non-Yankee fan's side, it's fun for baseball seeing these two teams go at them. As a fan of one of the two teams, this has been a I think I might be going gray. I need to ask my girlfriend next time I see her. Am I grayer now that the series is almost over? As I'm watching the Yankees sweat out a 3-2 lead with half their bullpen unavailable. But you're not here to listen to me talk about the Yankees and the Blue Jays. You're here to go through the bullpen. So on today's episode, we're going to do our usual. We're going to go through some latest news and notes. A lot of exciting things, including our prodigal son, Pete Fairbanks, returning. But not to the best starts. But we'll get into that and more. We'll dive into some of the little debates as to closers we want to roster the rest of the season, go through each division, just kind of do a little best closer debate since this is a lighter mood. And of course, we'll wrap up with another episode of Name That Closer. So we'll start off with some of the news and notes. We'll start with the injuries. The big one is we did lose one of our more consistent closer. AJ Puck has been placed on the 15-day day IL with nerve irritation in his left elbow. No full timetable for his return, but the nice thing for the Marlins is that they seem to have one guy they're going to, and it's not a committee. I think we know who's going to be taking that job. So, Rick, who's your current favorite for the Marlins saves and anybody you want to roster for holds, considering that they're 14-1 in one-run game so far?
Yeah, it looks like they've gone right to Dylan Floro, which makes sense. He's got closer experience. And, you know, he's one of those guys who he's like... He might be what's Nick's term for a Holly is like the ultimate Toby. Like I feel like Floro is just like the steady. He's never going to wreck your ratios, but he's not going to strike anyone out. So it's not the funnest guy to roster, but he is one of the safest, you know, options out there. And that goes for even when Puck returns for holds leagues, he's going to still be in the mix there. I was big on Hugh Oscar Brazoban, but he's hit a little bit of a rough patch recently. You know, Tanner Scott, we kind of know the deal with him. He's hot and cold every other week. But if you get him, you know, on a good week, you're going to get, you know, 7+ Ks and some saves or holds and, you know, decent ratios. So, yeah, it's, you know, I think once they get healthy, like this pitching staff as in general is going to be, it's a tough division, obviously, but there's a good staff here from, you know, between the starters and the bullpen. So it sounds like Puck should be back soonish. It doesn't seem like he's going to be out more than the maximum 15 days. So, or the minimum 15 days. So I guess Floro is not really a must add in any leagues because of how quick Puck could return. But you know, those leagues where you're struggling for saves, those roto leagues, then you're going to want to pick up Floro for now.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like he's going to be subject to any sort of platoon like we've seen in the past. We saw this sort of last year with between Floro and Tanner Scott, as Scott's the southpaw there. Floro, in the first game that he got a save last Sunday, he faced a switch hitter and three righties. And then on Wednesday, he faced a switch hitter, a lefty, and whatever Ildemar Vargas is. Loading.
Switch hitter.
Yeah. Okay.
So he faced a lefty and two switch hitters there. So there you would have normally used a lefty. I'm not really sure what the platoon splits are for Jaime Candelario and Ildemar Vargas. Actually, I think Candelario is better versus lefties. But anyway, it doesn't seem like Floro is going to be used versus righties and Scott versus lefties. So I think Floro is probably the safe bet for at least another week. So definitely in like 15-team leagues, I'll definitely see people considering him for a stream of a week.
it's nice that Skip Schumacher is making our job a little bit easier. It seems like a lot of these teams, when they lose their top closer, they go into some sort of committee, see the New York Yankees at this point right now. But it's nice to know that Floro is the for sure guy. And like you said, if you need him in a 15-team league, maybe in a 12-team and you need saves, go get him. But just make sure you stash AJ Puck. I think once he's back, he'll easily take that job and run with it. But like Rick said, Floro still will be rosterable for holds leagues. On to the weekly Arizona Diamondback update. All-Star Joe Mantiply was placed on the 15-day IL with a strained right hamstring. We know he wasn't fully in the committee for saves, but this gives us a good excuse to talk about the Arizona Diamondbacks and our read on that pen. So Jake, we'll start with you. What's your current read out in Arizona? Who's your favorite at this point, or is there even one?
Yeah, it's been sort of up and down throughout the season. I think everybody was really excited about Andrew Chafin early on. And with Mantiply coming back, it sort of allowed Chafin to not have to be used in sort of any lefty specialist role. I mean, they have other lefties in that bullpen as well. Kyle Nelson's really good, but Chafin is just striking out more batters than ever and was doing really well. But then he started struggling in the past couple of weeks. And that sort of seemed to take him out of save situations, and it turned him into more of a high leverage guy. And that allowed Miguel Castro to grab a couple of saves. I'm not super enamored by Castro this year. He's striking out just 21% of batters, which is exceptionally low, not only for him, but for a shutdown reliever in general. So I don't have a lot of faith that this new version of Castro is going to be super effective throughout the year. And the fact that right now, over the past week, there's been three saves, two of them to Castro and one of them to Chafin, suggests that Castro doesn't have the role all to himself. I'm not super excited to go out and get him, though. If you do need saves, I think Chafin's probably rostered in the majority of leagues with the way that he's pitched. So if you're trying to either get ahead of sort of a transition of the role here, or sort of do what we're seeing with Dylan Floro in Miami and just sort of stream a few saves, I think Castro's a good bet on that front, but don't expect him to avoid all of the blowups or strike out all of the batters, because that's not what he's been doing this year. But there's no competition outside of those two guys. I'm not really worried about Scott McGuff anymore or anybody else in that bullpen coming on to steal that role. So as long as Mantiply's out, I think it's going to be between Castro and Chafin, with Chafin in more of a high leverage role, and maybe they'll sort of platoon it up in the ninth.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to say, yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree. I still think Chafin's the favorite there, but yeah, it's going to be, you know, if there's three righties coming up, you're going to probably see Castro. But yeah, their Mantiply going down really does thin things out for them, because he was starting to really, you know, pick it up since he came back from his original IL stint. So yeah, now we're, you know, they still, you know, have some question marks behind Chafin and Castro right now.
I was going to say, you think, does Castro go in, this, like you said, the same situation as Floro, get a 15-teamer, and if you're desperate for saves in a 12, maybe? Is that kind of where you're looking to pick him up at?
I think for Castro, I'd probably keep that to like 15-16-teamers, yeah. I don't think in 12-teamers I'm ready yet, but it's like you say, I mean, that K rate is... it's not what you want from a closer. It's kind of, you know, questioning how long he can kind of hold this thing together. And, you know, the ratios are fine now, but I'd still rather Chafin.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I think Castro and 12 teamers, if you're like streaming, like I have a daily points league where, you know, and anytime you have an open roster spot and you have a full lineup of hitters, then you just go and grab a reliever. And I think Castro is a great option for that, because saves are going to get you a lot more points there. So that's sort of the type of thing where it's like a daily league or a 12 teamer where you're like, I don't know, not really technically super desperate for saves, but you know, you don't have a strong save contingent and you have an open roster spot and there's not too many options on the wire, then I think that's where Castro can fit.
The nice thing for the Diamondbacks, they have two other lefties currently in their pen with Kyle Nelson and Anthony Mizuwitz. I may butcher the name. Misevich, thank you. So it's a good thing for him is that he won't be kind of like what we were worried about with Brandon Hughes early in the season, which we'll get to in just a few minutes, but he could still keep the high leverage save opportunity. So I agree with you. Chafin's still the guy I'd want most, but in a 15-teamer, I'm willing to take a flyer on Miguel Castro. I was intrigued by him early in the season, hoping to get those K numbers up. I would agree with that. we'll run through the final three injuries real quick and, you know, see if any of them stand out for you. Brad Boxberger is placed on a 15-day IL with strained right forearm. We'll talk about the impact that has on the Cubs in just a moment. John Schreiber, 15-day IL with right lat tightness. And Ian Hamilton, who we hyped up last week as a potential hold candidate, he was placed on the 15-day IL with right groin strain because Domingo Germán could not use sticky stuff. So he got ejected and forced Hamilton to come in rusty and strained his groin. So any of those moves sort of stand out to you on a fantasy level? What impact do those have, specifically the Cubs and the Yankee bullpen for you guys?
Yeah, the Hamilton move, definitely, because that Yankees bullpen we talked about kind of before we started recording, that the Yankees bullpen is really thin. They got Ryan Weber pitching in big spots right now for them. Never want to see that. So, yeah, Hamilton's a big loss there. And Boxberger, I don't think, you know, I don't think that should be a big deal for the Cubs. But Schreiber for the Red Sox, maybe. You know, they've been leaning a lot on Josh Winkowski and a setup role. I don't think Chris Martin's pitched in the past week, so they're kind of, you know, hurting on themselves at the back end. But hopefully that's nothing too long for Schreiber. Hopefully he's back soon.
Yeah, Martin pitched yesterday, but I think it does sort of push Winkowski up into more of a clear top holds option out of the Boston pen, because Schreiber was sort of the only really trusted reliever out of there. I know Chris Martin's semi-trusted. He's got an ERA of 1.5, but he's striking out less than 20% of batters, but that's nothing special inside the Red Sox bullpen. Everybody's striking out less than 20% of batters, which is pretty wild. So losing Schreiber as like your top strikeout guy and having Kenley at 29% being your top strikeout guy is not great. But yeah, I think these aren't super impactful in terms of fantasy, mostly for saves plus holds leagues, and I think Winkowski is probably the biggest winner here.
Yeah, and I'll wrap up with the Yankees with Hamilton out. You said it has moved Weber and Abreu up to pecking order, but it's more of a they had nobody left in today. We've seen throughout this Toronto series, Clay Holmes has moved out completely out of the closer's job. He's no longer a closer. He is the high leverage, get the middle of the order out in the seventh inning, big spots the Yankees have been using all along, leaving guys like Michael King and Wandy Peralta to pick up the saves. So while King's the guy we're hyping up, I'll throw Wandy Peralta in as a 15-teamer streamer, sort of with the Miguel Castros, below Dylan Floro. But if you're looking to take a flyer on someone, he's got three saves lately. So I don't think Wandy Peralta is someone that he's someone to get. If you're really desperate for saves, you want to take a flyer, he can get you one or two during a week with how the Yankees are currently using their pen. So keep an eye on that, especially with Hamilton out. On in the transactions, we'll start off in Chicago since we were just talking about them. Brandon Hughes was activated from the 15-day IL with left knee inflammation, and they also recalled Jeremiah Estrada. While it doesn't have an impact, at least a Boxberger injury doesn't, for how the Cubs are using their pen. Does Hughes coming back affect how you guys are viewing the Cubs pen? We did see him get a save opportunity. I believe it was either Wednesday or Tuesday night.
Yeah, it was the other night, and he failed to convert, but that wasn't entirely his fault. He kind of came into a tough situation, but it's good to see them trusting him in big spots. I think before this last time he was on the IL, I kind of was getting excited for him possibly returning to the closer role, but yeah, that's the situation right now. That's the one team where I still, you know, it's someone different every week, it looks like, and it might just be that way the rest of the year, because they do have some, you know, they do have good options there. Their bullpen's not there's no lack of talent. It's just finding roles for everyone and consistency, really.
When Hughes got recalled, I think the first thought that I had was now Mark Leiter can be the closer, because the thing with Mark Leiter when Hughes was out was he was sort of the lefty specialist. Rick has pointed out in the last few podcasts that Leiter has reverse splits, so that allows him to sort of be the lefty specialist as a right-hander, which is somewhat weird, a little funky, but that's what you have to do when you don't have any lefties. And now that Hughes is back, Leiter's not the only guy that can get left-handers out at an above average rate. So now that sort of leaves him to just be the best reliever in the bullpen. He has been thus far. In terms of ERA, he's right up there with Adbert Alzolay, and he's got the highest strikeout rate in that bullpen. among anybody with at least six innings pitched. He's up to 38% just about. And so I think that's the impact of Hughes coming back. I don't think Hughes is going to be super impactful in terms of saves, but I think that does allow Mark Leiter Jr. into more save opportunities in the ninth. But I still like Alzolay more, to be honest.
You still like Alzolay more? Rick, who would you pick? Alzolay or Leiter or someone else in this pen if you had the roster one cup?
I mean, I like Alzolay better than Leiter, but I do think Leiter is going to, if I had to guess who's going to get the more save chances in the next week or two, I would say Leiter. Overall, I mean, I know it's hard with, like, you know, relief prospects, but Estrada's back up. I would like to see him stick and, you know, kind of work his way into a setup role and then, you know, maybe potentially a closer role down the line. But, yeah, I think for the short term, I think it's Leiter, but Alzolay is my favorite right now as far as who I would like to see in the role.
Now on to what you've probably all been waiting for. We've made it 15 minutes. I'm impressed. We have not talked about Pete Fairbanks yet, but we must do it. Pete Fairbanks was activated in 15-day IL with right forearm inflammation. We're all excited. We're all rejoicing as guys who hyped him up all season, and he proceeds to blow his first save opportunity he gets for Tampa Bay. What's your current read out in there? I know we talked about whether he would be in a committee if Jason Adam. What's your opinion on that? Do we think that Fairbanks leads the team in saves moving forward? Do they split? Who do you want to roster, if not both?
Yeah, I think we're at a point right now where both probably should be rostered until we get some more clarity. It sounded like Fairbanks was going to, you know, return to the closer role once he got returned from the IL. So I, you know, want to see, you know, at least give him a few weeks to see how that works out and see what his stuff looks like. I mean, his fastball velocity is still down a bit from last year. I noticed when he came back, he only threw a slider and fastball. I didn't throw that splitter. Yeah, it's not been a very exciting year for, I know we hyped him up in the preseason, but the results just haven't been there yet. And Adam was thriving kind of in that closer role. And then the other night he goes out and, you know, lets up a home run on a slider that, you know, has been a dominant pitch for him all season. So, could be just a fluky thing, but I think in 12 teamers, I think you want to roster both Fairbanks and Adams right now and just see how things play out. Because if one of them does take the closer role, we know how good this Rays team is and how good both those pitchers are in general. So I think they're both whole.
Yeah, I'd have to agree on Adam and Fairbanks. I think it's pretty clear that both of them are going to factor into this bullpen for the foreseeable future. I think I was really concerned, honestly, when Fairbanks first went down that he would be out for the season because it was like forearm stuff. So you always think Tommy John surgery. So I'm glad to see my guys back. But I think it's sort of unfair to say that he's not really lived up to what we expected of him. He really hasn't pitched enough to do that. This was the first game that he actually allowed any runs this season. So this is the first time we've seen him not really pitch well. So sort of unfair to say that about my guy. I'm feeling personally attacked a little bit, but, you know, that's fine. But yeah, I think they're probably going to split this role. Adam was the guy called upon to close out the game first. There were three blown saves in the game on Wednesday. First, Ryan Thompson, and then Adam came on to close the game out in the ninth. So he seemed to be the preferred option there. And then he blew the save, and then Fairbanks did the same again in the 10th inning to take the loss. So sort of disaster all around. Maybe it was their strategy for the day, try to blow the save and still come away with the win. You know, don't want teams to think you're cheating. Cough, cough, Yankees.
Excuse you. This is my podcast.
But yeah, I think they're definitely both rosterable right now because whoever wins out this battle, it does seem like the Rays are pretty set on using a set closer, which is bonkers. I don't think anybody was going to expect that before the season outside of us. But they've been using a set closer throughout the season, and the Rays are the best team in baseball. And both of these guys are elite relievers. So whoever wins out here, I think, is going to be definitely rosterable in 100% of league. So I don't think you want to let go of either one of them yet until we figure out what's going on. I'd love to see Pete Fairbanks start striking guys out, though. That would definitely make me feel a little bit more comfortable about still praising him.
That would be nice. I would like to. I still think Fairbanks ends the season with more saves than Adam, or at least from this point on. He'll still lead the team in saves, but like you guys both said, it's going to be a 55-45 split in my mindset. Second one struggles. I don't think Cash is going to hesitate to flip to the other. So I think this might be one we talk a little bit more throughout the rest of the season. The final additions to the team's pens, real quick, see if it has any impacts. Brooks Raley, activated from the 15-day IL with left elbow inflammation for New York Mets. Garrett Crochet, activated from 15-day IL from his recovery from Tommy John surgery. His first outing was actually Thursday as we're recording this since 2021. So good to see both of them back. Does this have any sort of impact on your fantasy rosters?
Raley is definitely someone I'd still like in holds leagues, especially, you know, that bullpen is still, there's only three guys that they trust there, so really it gives them another dimension to especially being from the left side. Crochet is interesting. I mean, he looked pretty good today. Velocity wasn't bad for, you know, his first time pitching in 2 years. It's just going to be interesting to see how they use him. It sounds like they want to kind of stretch him out in a multi-inning role potentially, so he's not pitching on back-to-back days. And I, you know, also have to wonder if next year he's going to be a starter for that in that rotation. So but yeah, I think Crochet is someone to monitor in holds leagues, while Raley can actually, you know, help you out right away.
Yeah, and I don't know, it could be a while until Crochet actually plays into hold situations, and if it is a while, then that bullpen's about to get a big addition next week.
Yes, that's a great transition. And the reminder, Liam Hendricks has been going through his rehab assignment. He actually was just returned to Chicago. I believe he's going to throw a live BP session on Friday, I want to say. And then his return will likely be very quickly after that. So by the time we're recording this next week, we all expect Liam Hendricks will be back in the White Sox roster. Any concern that he doesn't get the job right away with him?
I think that I feel like they don't have to give him the role, but I just feel like the expectations and just his track record, and I would imagine there's going to be some bumps at the beginning. It's been a while. It is kind of a crazy quick return, all things considered, for, you know, it's pretty quick rehab assignment, and there was really not a ton of ramp up. I'm sure he was doing some stuff on the side, but it could be a little rocky at first, but stick with them, because this is, you know, still one of the better closers in baseball, and I'm sure the White Sox will be happy to have him back instead of, you know, debating between Ronaldo Lopez and Kendall Graveman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, those Australians are built different. You never know. I heard he was throwing BP to the nurses, but, you know, I mean, that's just a rumor.
Look, if anyone's going to do it, I think Liam Hendricks is someone to do it. I'm sure he was bothering every nurse around him to have a catch, play catch, whatever you want to call it. We're not getting that debate on this show, but he's...
It's not having a catch.
Yeah. We'll agree to disagree, but it's good to see him back. He's one of the most electric relievers in baseball, one of the most fun players to watch on the field, so it's really exciting to have him back. I'm very happy to see that, and happy he was able to make a real good recovery and beat any timetable any of the three of us or anybody in the baseball industry could have expected him to do. And real quick, final news notes, if it has any sort of impact at all. MVP vote getter Ryan Tepera was designated for assignment from the Los Angeles Angels. Ryan Brazier designated for assignment from the Red Sox. And Javi Guerra was designated for assignment and outright with minors from Tampa Bay. Does this have any impact for either of you guys at all?
Oh, for, as a Red Sox fan, the Ryan Brazier thing is, and I mean, it's a long time coming, and I know Sox fans have rejoiced. It's, you know, it's, we've suffered through enough with Brazier here. Tepera is a sad, that's kind of, you know, I really had high hopes after, you know, after the Angels signed him, and that's, it's crazy to see how quickly that he kind of fell out of favor there. Could be an interesting reclamation project, though. I feel like a team like the Rays or Brewers or something will sign him or bring him in. He'll turn things around.
I was sad to see Javi Guerra go. I mean, just the way that you talk about the Rays, you know, taking anybody in and turning them into an elite reliever. I thought they would be able to do that with Guerra. He was just a guy that pumped gas and just didn't strike anybody out and had no control. And I thought maybe the Rays could do something with that. They were not able to do that, but he remains on the team, so hope is not lost.
Let's take a little break. We're going to go get back, talk about some of the risers and fallers and rankings before we get into our closer debates. So we'll take a quick break, get back with some of the risers and fallers and ranks when we get back on In the Pen. All right, as usual, we're going to go look at some of the risers and fallers in the rankings. Rick, as always, we're going to start with you. Who is your biggest riser in ranks from the past week?
So I'll go with Ryan Pressly on this list because I think, you know, he's kind of been turning things around. It's not like a glaring, you know, oh, Presley's back situation. Not no dominant weeks, but he's just slowly kind of putting things back together. And, you know, it's only 2 earned runs over the past month, and that's 12 innings pitched. He's struck out 10 on that time span, and he does have 7 saves. So, since that span. So, I mean, he's not, you know, the strikeouts are a little bit lower than what we've just come to expect from him, but the stuff plus loves him. PLV loves him. I think, you know, as long as he stays healthy and he's able to pitch, you know, and when needed, I think there could be a big second half for him. But it just comes down to his availability, really. But the stuff's still there. That's the good news. And as again, just getting him on the mound in safe situations will be the key.
Yeah, he really just started turning it around right when it sort of like hit the precipice of Abreu taking over that role, and then Pressly came out of the ashes and reclaimed that role.
It's good to see. For all the stuff we've talked about with him, I still have some concerns just based on the stuff we've talked about in past weeks. But it's nice to see him starting to come back into form. Maybe it was just the early season. We want to ease this guy in, considering he pitched in the WBC and has been injured in the past. So maybe now that we're in mid-May, it's time for him to ramp him up. So hopefully that's the case, but we'll keep a very close eye on for Ryan Pressly going forward. Jake, we'll move over to you. Who is your big riser over the past week?
I'm going to go with another guy that seemed to have been losing his closer role just a couple of weeks ago, and that's Scott Barlow for the Royals. He was a guy that I think our whole podcast was very concerned about, despite him not losing the role. He started off very poorly to the season, and it really seemed like that, on top of his reduced velocity and the resurgence of Aroldis Chapman, was going to be the perfect recipe to get him out of that closer role. But he's turned these around in the past 2 days, Tuesday and Wednesday. This past week, he got saves. His strikeout rate is up to 34%, and he's got his ERA down to 3.63. So he's sort of been on fire recently. That strikeout rate is the highest of his career. So he's definitely figured something out despite the lowered velocity, which is still somewhat concerning. But, you know, it seems like he's got something going right since April 22nd, he's tossed 10 and two-thirds scoreless innings with 16 strikeouts. So that's pretty impressive as well. He's walked just 2 batters during that time. And just considering the fact that he's been the closer for so long, that seems like a Mike Matheny thing to just... Oh, wait, that's not even their manager anymore. I don't know. So there goes that point. But it seems like he's going to be the guy for until, like, I don't know, his arm falls off, because Chapman has been just old Aroldis Chapman again, throwing 103 miles per hour, striking out everybody, being dominant walking and intimidating everybody on the mound. Yeah. Oh, he's back to walking everybody.
Yeah, he's
well. And I guess that hope is gone. So yeah, I mean, I think that really makes it. You just keep adding on to the point that Scott Barlow looks like his role is pretty safe for now until he eventually gets traded.
Yeah, it's from a month ago. We were all ready to, you know, all right, Chapman needs to be the closer, get Barlow out of there. And they've kind of done a 180 here, where, you know, Chapman is starting to kind of show some. He's got eight walks this month in 6.1 innings. So, you know, I thought the walks might have been behind him, but yeah, here they come again. And, you know, 8 walks, 8 Ks and 6.1 innings is, you know, what we kind of saw from Chapman towards the end of his Yankee tenure. So, Barlow, that just adds to Barlow's, you know, roles is security in the closer role. So it's definitely, for everyone who held on tight to Barlow after the rough beginning, should be paying dividends now.
I am one of those guys, so I'm very happy to see this, but it is good to see. And he was one of my favorite targets during draft season, so it's nice to see him come around. Araldis Chapman will still have his spot. I still don't think the Royals are fully off him, but it's nice to know that Barlow is starting to regain the trust of Matt Quattaro. My big riser for the week, it's another one of it's a free agent signing. Will Smith. Over his last four outings, he's gone 3 1/3. It's perfect scoreless innings, striking out 7 during that span, picking up saves in all four of those outings. Each of the last four save opportunities have gone to the Rangers. Jose Leclerc has come in, but in blowout situations, his last outing was an 11-3 win over the Oakland Athletics. It's Will Smith's job. There's no more competition from Jose Leclerc. If he is available in any of your leagues, you need to go get him because this is a closer on a good Texas Ranger team. They're a first place team, which is, I didn't know something I could say at this point in the season, but good on them. We had that talk at the beginning of the offseason when they signed Will Smith. Can he play in this job? Not only is he playing in this job, he's winning this job. So go get Will Smith. He's looked really sharp over his last couple of outings, has taken this job and ran with it for the Rangers.
Yeah, that's Smith's the guy for now. You just roll with him. I'm not sure the longevity. His fastball is just not good, but the slider's doing work right now for him. And, you know, he's still... I think it was the Mariners, the last save he had against the Mariners. I was looking at the strike zone plot, and I think he threw two strikes and struck out the side in order. So just getting guys to swing and miss out of the zone of a slider. Yeah, I mean, if it's working, it's working. So, and he's got the trust of his manager. So definitely worth the ad now if he's still available.
Yeah, definitely seems like the clear-cut closer out there. I thought maybe Jonathan Hernandez would start swooping into that role, but he never hasn't really gotten there. He's sort of actually been terrible this past week since I said that. Oof. But yeah, I think the only concern with Will Smith right now is, I mean, he, like you said, the fastball, but also he's just given up so many fly balls. He's got a 25% ground ball rate, which is one of the lowest in all of baseball. That puts him in the third percentile amongst relievers. That's not the good percentile. But that does mean that the 5.6% home run to fly ball rate is likely to start turning around the other way, resulting in a few more home runs. And that's not really what you like to see out of closers. So he's not going to be pristine throughout the season. I think everybody knows that as a 33-year-old reliever, but you know, right now he's got the role. It's a good team. He's got a history of being a closer. He's not that old, and he still is able to strike guys out. So I feel pretty confident that, you know, it's a solid hold right now.
Yep, I couldn't agree with you more. Obviously, we'll go with those risers. Some people are gonna have to fall in the ranks. So Jake, we'll start with you this time. Who is dropping the most in your ranks over the past week?
I mean, we talked about the Rays, so I think I'll just keep it there. It's difficult to keep a closer that is uncertain high in the ranks. So I think it's pretty easy to say whoever the Rays closer is falling down right now, because there's so much uncertainty between who's going to be the guy, whether that means they're splitting saves, Adam and Fairbanks, whether that means they're splitting saves and that pulls them down because their ceiling for saves totals is lowered, or one is poorer than the other, or, you know, I don't know, whatever they decide to do, it's going to pull down somebody's ranking until we see one of those guys solidified in that role and pitching back to their normal abilities. And then, you know, then they'll start re-rising in the ranks. But I think right now the uncertainty between who owns that role is reason enough to drop them down the ranks a little.
Yeah, it's unfortunate too, because they're both good relievers who, if they were, you know, clear cut closers on any other good team, you know, they're easily top 20, top 15, possibly even top 10 options when they're going right. So yeah, it's just the uncertainty of the thing right now. And I still hope, you know, one of them, you know, especially Fairbanks, I want to see Fairbanks get it together, just because we've seen the potential. We saw it last year. If he really, you know, can, because he's got the role. The thing we were concerned about before the season was the role. How is he going to be able to close, you know, close out the majority of games? And he had it. He probably has it still if he, coming back from injury. It's just, you know, he needs to get the stuff back to where it was before.
Yep. That's well said. Can't really add too much more. We covered them a good portion at the beginning of the show. So let's hope that one of them can take the job and we won't have to keep talking about the Rays closers being down. Rick, over to you. Who is your biggest follow over the past week?
I keep flip-flopping on this guy, but Kenley Jansen, you know, it was great to see him join the 400 save club last week. You know, only seventh pitcher all time. That's crazy. And he's definitely been one of the best closers, you know, in my lifetime. And we saw, you know, we talked about him hitting 99 with his cutter, and then this past weekend he's back down to 93. So maybe he was just amped up in Atlanta. Maybe the gun was like extra hot, or, you know, I don't know. It's just it wasn't a good weekend for him. And I know there was some, you know, shenanigans going on with Contreras stepping out on him, and that kind of rattled him, but it's still kind of inexcusable to let up 5 earned runs on, you know, 4 hits, 4 walks, and just getting 3 outs over the weekend. So I think we're just, you know, gotta get used to just ups and downs with him. It's going to be, is he going to be healthy? Is he going to pitch well? It's just going to be, you know, a lot of hot and a lot of cold from him, I think, for the rest of the season. And I don't think he's someone we can really trust as like an elite top tier closer right now.
Yeah, that's very fair. There's just nobody else in that bullpen that you're really worried at all that he's going to lose his role anytime soon. So I think that's the only silver lining there, is that even if he pitches this poorly, he probably is going to take a lot more to lose his role. But yeah, there's definitely concern where it's just like, yeah, that inconsistency. And I think a lot of it resides in his windup. Just getting the most out of his windup is usually how he gets the most out of his pitches as well. So that'll be something to watch. I think he obviously sort of knows. I feel like he's got a pretty good feel of what is going wrong when he's pitching poorly, because we've seen him have bad stretches in past seasons and sort of right the ship. So hopefully he can do that again. I mean, he's a very, very veteran pitcher, so he sort of has a feel for that kind of thing. So let's hope he can right the ship. You know, you want those Red Sox to be good. Sorry, Callen, but yeah.
Thank you, Jake.
You're welcome. Yeah.
You know, Jake, you're really, you call the Yankees cheaters. Sorry. Want the Red Sox to be good.
Well, who likes Yankees outside of Yankees fans?
A lot of people.
True points.
I know. It's fun to be the villain at some points, but
yes.
The final follower for me actually dropped the most in Rick's ranks over the past week, and it's Raisel Iglesias. Hopefully this is just, you know, your first couple outings off the IL jitters, but in 2 straight outings, both against Boston and Toronto, gave a combined 4 runs in just an inning and a third, only striking out 2 in that span, walking 1. Fastball velocity has been a little bit down. His CSW is dropping at this point. There is concern just because it is Atlanta and they have the tendency of they'll make the quick switch. Iglesias should be the guy. You saw what Minter can do in the role. They know we have Nick Anderson's pitching well. And they're not a team who's going to hesitate to make a move by the trade deadline if they need to, if Iglesias continues to struggle. Do I think he'll turn it around? Yes, we predicted him to lead the league in saves at the beginning of the season. So I think he'll be okay. And he's proven in the past. I'm not as too concerned about him yet, but just, you know, raise the alarm bells a little bit, or, you know, whatever the saying I'm trying to think of is, you know, keep an eye on it. If there are some warning signs of what Iglesias done, he did pick up the save on Wednesday against the Rangers through a perfect inning to hold the 6-5 game. So hopefully that's the start of turning things around. But just a note to keep an eye on Iglesias. His first couple outings back from the IL have not gone exactly how we would have hoped them to go.
Yeah, it was good to see him bounce back yesterday or Wednesday of this week. Yeah. The velocity did come back as well, so it alleviates some concerns. But yeah, you never know. If a guy who missed, you know, over a month with a shoulder injury, it's, you know, you want to kind of monitor things for the first couple weeks to see how he looks, what the stuff's like, if he, you know, if he's getting strikeouts and whatnot. So I think I would probably, you know, it's always tough. You're coming back. I probably should have lowered him to begin with just because of the layoff. But, you know, this is a guy who when right, when healthy, he is, you know, one of the best closers in the game. And I still like the long-term outlook, but yeah, it's we got to see how things play out the next week or so.
Yeah, I think he just needs to get his feet back under him. I think he'll get back there. It may take him a while to sneak back into your top five, but I think he'll get there eventually. He just sort of needs to warm up. It's hard to miss a month and a half and then come back and try to be the guy that you were for the past couple of years. But he's really been one of the best closers in all of baseball for an extended period of time, and that's all you really want. So I feel pretty confident that he'll get back there at some point. Looking at this bullpen, though, there are great options. Minter's really been unlucky this year, and Nick Anderson's been good too. But what is up with Jesse Chavez having the best season of his career at 39? The guy is striking out 29% of the batters. That's a career high, and he's got a 2.50 ERA and a career low 2.92 xFIP. That is so weird. At 39.
I don't want to believe it. I don't believe it. I don't know. It is weird for sure. But yeah, it's good for him. You know, sure. It's kind of been saved. He's been saving them early on in the season when they had some guys hurt. He was a big factor there. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's going to pitch until he's 50 if he keeps doing this.
Yeah.
If anybody can do it, it's Jesse Chavez. It's one of the crazier stories at this point in the season. He's looked really good. I think he's someone you should be impressed by. I'm liking what I'm seeing from him. I agree with you. Iglesias turn things around. He'll likely get himself back into the top 10 for sure, if not the top 5 in Rick's ranks, and get back to being the reliever we all know he can be. So we'll take one final break. When we get back, we'll start some debates. We've done enough agreeing with each other. Let's see if we can have any debates of the best closer in each division, you know, both for fantasy and for real life, just to, you know, get some more debates going. We've been agreeing a lot lately. So all that and more, we get back on In the Pen. All right, with the little bit of news and all that stuff we had going on, we wanted to have a little fun, do some of these player debates. So we'll start out in the AL East. We're going to go division by division, talk about who is the best closer in each division, try and see where we can form a little bit more disagreement. So except we'll start in the AL East. Rick, as the resident AL East expert, at least among you and Jake, who right now stands out to you as the best in that division?
Yeah, so I think there's two names that stick out, but I'm going to still go with Felix Bautista, and I know the walks have been crazy high this year, and that's, you know, I hate that. I hate seeing that. I mean, for me, I want, you know, my ideal reliever will have a walk rate under 10%, and he's at 16.5 right now, but he's still getting swings and misses at just a phenomenal rate of 22.5% swinging strike rate. You know, that's good for third in baseball right now. So I'm not too concerned about him and the whip and the walk right now. I think, you know, hitters have just become a little bit more patient, and that's led to some more walks, but it's still getting strikeouts at a high rate, and the ERA is still at 1.35. And as good as Cano has been there, I think Bautista is still the clear-cut closer and doesn't have anything to worry about yet. So I'll go with Bautista as my favorite in the AL East.
That's a good call. I wish I could go with Pete Fairbanks here, but unfortunately he really has not pitched enough. I think I might have gone with him even if his ERA was sky high, mostly for the memes, but I think that there's not too much of an argument here, right? You said Bautista sort of walks a lot of guys, but Jordan Romano's not really dominant enough to be named the best closer in this division. He's great. He's got barely fewer saves than Bautista, and he's been very solid throughout the past few years, so he sort of has that longevity a little bit over Bautista. But Bautista has been so dominant over the past couple of years. He strikes out so many guys. He's such a dominant force on the mound that I really don't think there's too much argument here. But who knows, when Fairbanks gets used to the grind of the season and gets into it, who knows what he'll look like in the second half.
Yep, we'll sweep it. Felix Bautista is a guy for me. You saw him on, I believe it was Wednesday or Thursday, one of those, I forget which game now, because everything is starting to blend together. He got Shohei Ohtani out, and not only did Shohei Ohtani admit he got him, he went into the Orioles clubhouse, told him he got him, asked for an autograph. that enough to me. You know the stuff. It's been great. Jordan Romano is the only other guy who I would think would get up into that conversation, but he's had his ups and downs as well this season. And I'm just, you know, I think the stuff of Felix Bautista plays out better than Romano. So I'll sweep it, go with Felix Bautista. We'll go out to the AL Central. Jake, let's start with you, who is probably the easier call, but who's the go-to in the AL Central?
Well, it's an easy call if you're considering longevity here, if you're considering the past few years. If you're considering just 2023, I think you have a really, really close debate between multiple guys. I think the clear call is Emmanuel Clase in Cleveland. He's been the one of the consensus top three closers for a couple of years now, and that sort of is continued into this season, but he struck out just 15% of batters so far, not including his save on Thursday. So that's sort of really concerning, especially when you're comparing him to the other two options here that have strikeout rates over 30%. I think Yohan Duran sort of fits that role of Felix Bautista, where his stuff is absolutely incredible. He just hasn't gotten as many save opportunities as the rest of the guys in this division. And then Alex Lang has actually been quietly incredible throughout the season. He's sort of in that same boat as Duran, where he's been really good, but he just only has seven saves because the Tigers don't win too many games. But he's got the highest strikeout rate and the lowest ERA. And I think if we're just going on this season, I think I'm going to go controversially Alex Lang. I think Duran's got the best stuff, but I don't know. Alex Lang has looked like the best closer so far this year in the AL Central.
Yeah, he's going to end up being their nomination for the All-Star game, just like Soto has been the past 2 years. So he's got that at least going for him. But yeah, it's a
All-Star
good
Alex Lang.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it. I was torn between Clase and Duran. And I think Clase has opened up a door where, you know, before the season started, it would have been like Clase, no doubt. But Clase has kind of opened up a door with that. Yeah, that 14.8% K rate is good for 292nd. In baseball, which is, I mean, that's just bad. It's crazy to think how good his stuff is that he's not able to strike anybody out. And I think it opened up a door for Duran, but I haven't been overly impressed with Duran. I was hoping Duran would dominate. I thought this was going to be like the year where he kind of, you know, marked his dominance and just kind of like, hey, I am the next big reliever here. And it's not just the opportunities. He's been good. He hasn't been great. And I think, you know, Clase is still just the guy that I could see a big second half from Clase potentially, you know, where he strikes out two guys a game and kind of brings that thing back to you know, normalcy, that K rate. But, yeah, Clase is still the guy for me here, but there are some interesting options everywhere. And then Hendricks, when Hendricks is back, then it just adds another name to this division.
Yeah, when Hendricks backs and is at his peak, it's a very, very difficult debate. For now, it's still a debate. Like you said, I like what I've seen. Duran Lang's been great. I agree. He's going to be the Tigers representative because he's been that good, but also because Tigers got to have somebody. So you might as well put their closer, just like they've done every other year, essentially. But I'm still going for Manuel Clase. I know strikeouts haven't been there, but like Rick said, I expect a full bounce back in the second half, if it's even considered a bounce back. He's still been good. Strikeouts haven't been there. I expect him to get back to his form.
Who did Rick choose?
I'm going with Clase. Clase is okay. Yeah.
It wasn't clear.
I think that's it's the right call at this point. But I do like shouting out someone like Alex Lang. It's something that, you know, just a reminder to fantasy managers too, that if he's still out there, he's been that good. I know the Tigers haven't exactly been great, but they're picking things up in May. So save opportunities should be coming some more for Alex Lang. Let's head out west, and we'll go to the American League West, where I guess this is more of a debate than I would have thought at this point in the season. But Rick, we'll start with you.
Is it really a debate? I mean, is it not Zach Jackson?
I was like, I hope he makes the joke.
Yeah, I know. There's two names here. I kind of was torn between both Paul Sewald and Ryan Pressly. But I'm going to go with Sewald. I like what he's done. I was just side story. I was at the Red Sox game on Tuesday, and he came in down 6 runs in the 7th inning. And I'm sitting there like, what is happening right now? What are we doing? Why is he pitching in this game? But yeah, other than the weird usage there, and like you know, he should be their closer even when Munoz gets healthy, even with that whole bullpen clicking and healthy. He should be the only guy getting save opportunities, and he's earned it. He's pitched well over the past couple of years there. He's really transformed himself, and WHIP's under one, K rate at 32%. PLV loves him, 5.5. That's good for eighth in baseball. I think Sewald's, the guy here in the West.
Yeah, there's nobody really overwhelming in this division where it's like a clear favorite. And it looks like it's between Presley and Sewald right now, though Carlos Estevez has been really good this year, which is cool to see, leaving Coors and figuring something out. But I don't think he's got anything over Sewald. So I think I'm going with him as well. He's sort of one of the most underrated relievers in baseball right now. I think nobody really considers him as like a top 10 guy, but the way that he's pitched this year and the way that he pitched last year, if you put those together, it's like, yeah, Paul Sewald's one of the best relievers in all of baseball, and nobody really talks about him at all in that conversation.
Yeah, let's sweep it. Why not? I think Presley, if he was fully his usual self, would take the kicks even slightly over Sewald, but some of the concerns that we've mentioned him throughout the season, put him slightly below. It's close. It's probably more of like a 1A, 1B situation between those two. But the stuff Sewald has, it's been great. And he came and pitched at PitchCon. Spoke at PitchCon. So that gives him a little extra vote in my book. So we'll sweep it and go with Paul Sewald. Set out to the National.
He's at a panel. Yeah. He's at a panel where he's just like pitching. You're just watching him do a bullpen.
Look, if we can get that to happen, cool. Yeah, if we can have that happen, I'm sure Nick would sign right up for that and let him throw a bullpen for us. So I'd watch it. I'd say that for sure.
Yeah, me too. PitchCon's sick.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Let's go to the NL East, where if it was a normal season, we had Edwin Diaz, it would be a slam dunk. But with him out for the season, it's an interesting debate at this point. So who is your favorite for the National League East?
Jake, you can go first on this one, because this is the toughest one for me, this division.
Yeah, it's sort of a crapshoot right now with all of the injuries. Like, I don't know, are we considering AJ Puck? I know he just went down, and like, I don't know, you said Edwin Diaz is down, but like, if we're considering all the injured guys, like Jose Alvarado, I think I might have had over Edwin Diaz, because the way that he was pitching, he was looking like one of the most dominant relievers of all time. Yeah, I mean, this is really hard now. Now we're like deciding between Kyle Finnegan and Craig Kimbrell with his 6 ERA, and then David Robertson, who's been great but is pretty old, and Dylan Floro and Raisel Iglesias. I think if Iglesias had pitched more than 4 1/3 innings, I would probably go with him. But I think right now it's clearly David Robertson. He's also quietly been really good recently. He's up to a 35% strikeout rate this year with a 1 ERA, and I don't feel like he's being talked about a lot. But among this group of I was going to say unsung heroes. I mean, nobody's a hero here, but he seems like the guy that's probably the one who's been the most dominant so far this year. But if we're considering, a longer period of time, I think you go Raisel Iglesias. Yeah.
Yeah. I have to have like a few asterisks here. It's like, if we're before the season starts, it's Edwin Diaz. Once the season's, if we're counting injuries in season, then Jose Alvarado. But if we're not counting either of those guys, if we're counting current closers, I'd have to say Iglesias. And even that, Robertson has pitched the best. He's been the safest one here. I mean, AJ Puck's been pretty good too in Florida, or in Miami. So, but yeah, I think if we're talking for, moving forward for the rest of the season, it's Iglesias for me. It's still early. He's only pitched 4 1/3 innings, but as long as the velocity stays normal, and he's still getting swings and misses at a pretty good rate so far, and he's not, the good thing with him is what you're getting. He's not going to walk a lot of guys. He's typically around the plate, so I'm a big fan. I would take him over anyone in this division for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I'll agree. I'll take Iglesias. I wanted to say someone like David Robertson at this point, but it's just, he's just a consistent guy. I'll take a little bit more upside, obviously, with Iglesias. So I'm going to go with him. We trust him at the end of the season. four innings isn't enough for me to back away yet. So I'm still going to hold on to him. BNL Central is up next, and they have probably five guys possibly you can make a case for if you're Jake and want to talk about Michael Fulmer a little bit longer. But you got four or five guys who at the beginning of the draft season were in the top 10, top 12 in terms of rankings. But who is the ultimate favorite out in the Central?
Yeah, who would have thought? I mean, I guess it does kind of make sense when you look at it before the season started that this really was. I mean, there's four really good closers here. And then, yeah, there could be a fifth one in Chicago, depending on if they would just let, you know, Adbert Alzolay close out games. But I'm going to go with Devin Williams over Diaz and Bednar and Helsley. I think Devin Williams, just consistency, the track record. I mean, he's been quietly dominant. I haven't really heard anything. He's just been quiet this year. He's only got six saves. This Brewers team is underperforming once again. So it hurts his save chances, but he when he's on the mound, he's still been, you know, absolutely dominant. And there's not really much to say. We know he's been pitching this way for a while, so Devin Williams is still my favorite reliever in baseball right now, or closer.
That's fair. I mean, I think this is the toughest debate here because, you know, Ryan Helsley was so dominant last year. So it's like, are we looking over the past 2 years? Devin Williams has the longest track record. Alexis Diaz might be the best strikeout pitcher in all of baseball so far this year. And then David Bednar is just unhittable, basically 0.56 ERA. So it's sort of just like, pick your flavor. What's your favorite flavor? My favorite flavor is strikeouts. So I think Alexis Diaz has just been so incredible this year, pitching in Coors, Great American Ballpark, on just a terrible team that can drag you down a little bit, but that hasn't slowed him down at all. He's leading this division with 10 saves, and he also is striking out 49% of batters through his first 16 innings, which is absolutely incredible. And he's just been super dominant. He's making up for the lack of Edwin Diaz by basically becoming his brother. And that's really awesome to see. I think David Bednar might be my number two here, but I mean, it's all those three, Bednar, Williams, and Diaz, have been really incredible this year. So it's really hard to choose.
My personal favorite is Vanilla. It's bland, but you know what you're gonna get from him. It's, you can't really go wrong with it. And that to me is Devin Williams. It's a lot. Changeup's great. You know, the stuff's great. And all these guys are very good. Like you said, you can make a great case for Diaz. You can make a great case for Bednar. Heck, Presley's going to likely turn things around, and he's got electric stuff, but you know what you're going to get from Devin Williams. That changeup is just nasty. Pitched for Team USA and looked like his usual self. The saves are going to get there. This NL Central is just wide open in terms of competitiveness. I think the Brewers are still going to be, while underperforming, right up there in terms of trying to win that division, which will likely lead to more save opportunities for Williams. So I'm still going to go with him. He hasn't done anything yet this year to stand out in terms of making me worried about him, and you know, I'll trust him more than any of these guys. But it's a great bulk division for closers, unlike for competitive baseball teams. And to wrap it up, we'll go out to the NL West, where I don't know, this is you have one guy who kind of stands out, but we weren't too high on him, so is anyone gonna be bold and go against the grain there?
I feel like Jake is, but I'm going to take Josh.
I don't know.
I'm going to take Josh Hader, though. I know there's one other guy. Camille Duvall has been pitching really well lately. But I'm going to go Hader. It's, you know, he's bounced back from last year's horrific July, August. You know, that whole thing where we were wondering, is this the end? Maybe, but he's back to, and you know, the strikeouts aren't where they used to be, but I'm perfectly content with a 36% strikeout rate. It's not, you know, 40 plus like we were used to seeing from him. But as long as the ratios are going to be, you know, if he's got an ERA of 1 right now, WHIP of 0.72, I'll gladly take the 36% K rate. And he's really bounced back this year, and I hope he can continue it. But you know, there's always weird things always happen to him in August. I've been saying this in the past. He's got a really bad track record in August, so just watch out for that.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I want to say Camilo Doval here, he's got very comparable numbers to Josh Hader this year, but Josh Hader sort of has those extra check marks. He's walking fewer batters. He's got a lower whip. He's got at least a better track record, as long as you're not counting the second half of last season. Camilo Doval's been great. I think he's better than Evan Phillips, but I think Josh Hader takes the cake here.
I would agree. I'll go with Josh Hader. The track record's just hard to bet against, and well, while he's had those rough months, and month or two in the past, maybe it'll come up again this year. But the way he's pitching right now, he's not going to get back, like you said, to the old Josh Hader, where he's the best closer in baseball. But he's still top five in my mind in terms of both real life and fantasy. His stuff's really good. Shout out to Doval, and hopefully that the, you know, none of us wanted to be bold and go Scott McGuff for Miguel Castro. None of us wanted to make that call.
I was going to say, is there a clear cut third guy? Probably Evan Phillips, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
Daniel Bard.
No, he's nowhere to be seen. No.
Yeah, unfortunate. But yeah, I'll stick with Josh Hader, and you know, interesting. It's definitely interesting to look at those divisions one by one and go through that in terms of seeing who's the best and guys we should be, you know, looking into. And I think we found some good guys to keep an eye on, buying low sort of situations. But we'll wrap up like we always do, like we've been doing lately, with another edition of Name That Closer. So, Jake, take it away.
Yes, sir. So this one sort of picked itself, and I didn't know when I chose him, but today is this closer's birthday, so that probably gives it away, but it does allow us to, you know, celebrate this guy in multiple ways. But yeah, this closer was born in Mexico. He played from 2007 to 2021, and he debuted with the Kansas City Royals. You guys were already mentioning prior to the podcast that you think you already know who it is. Was this the point where you knew who it was?
Mexico and debuting for the Royals in 2007. Yeah,
I needed a little bit more, but once I started thinking about it, I was able to get it.
I might not be right though. I'm still debating because of all these teams he's pitched for. I'm trying to think if he actually pitched for. Yeah, but we'll see. Yeah.
Well, this guy was a right-handed pitcher that was an all-star by his second season in 2008. That was also what many consider to be his best season. He tossed 67 and a third innings with 66 strikeouts and a 1.60 ERA, a 0.86 whip, and 42 saves. Pretty incredible sophomore campaign there for this guy. And then he had his second all-star appearance just 2 years later by 2010, and then he never had any more All-Star selections. 2010, he had a 1.78 ERA and 43 saves, so he was really dominant his first few years. His accolades include those two All-Star appearances, finishing 7th in 2007 AL Rookie of the Year Award voting, and finishing 10th in AL Cy Young Award voting and 19th in AL MVP voting in that aforementioned 2010 campaign. Like Rick said, he pitched for a lot of other teams outside of Kansas City. He had two stints in Kansas City, but he also pitched for the Texas Rangers, the Detroit Tigers, the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Chicago White Sox, the Milwaukee Brewers, the Oakland A's, the Arizona Diamondbacks, and the Toronto Blue Jays. So the usual life for a long-lasting reliever is that you'll pitch for a lot of teams, and that was the case for this guy. And he wrapped up his career with 18.6 baseball reference WAR, a 3.11 ERA, and 229 saves, which is good for 42nd all time. You guys want to take a guess?
It's Joaquin Soria, right?
That's what I was thinking.
All right, good job. Yep, you're correct.
Yeah, the Royals and the time rent frame. Yeah, I just didn't realize he pitched for that many teams. I mean, I remember him in Oakland. I remember him in Toronto for a second. But like Detroit, I'm trying to remember. Like,
yeah, I don't remember any Detroit stint. I don't
Or like Pittsburgh. Yeah, it's.
I barely remember.
I think he like followed up after Valverde.
Oh man,
maybe yeah,
yeah.
A couple of those.
Oh, that's a good name.
Texas, I don't remember at all. Which might have been like early in his career.
I remember a little bit. Yeah, that was earlier. Yeah.
Yeah, Milwaukee, I don't remember. Chicago, I barely remember. Like, it's just those teams like that. But once you start seeing all the teams, I'm like, I feel like I remember hearing this guy bouncing around throughout his career. So,
yeah.
Great career. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember him in 08 pitching in that Yankee Stadium All-Star game.
Yeah.
He was that was a fun one. Yeah, that's definitely a name who I've not thought of much lately. So, it's always fun to hear guys like that.
Happy birthday, Joaquin.
Happy birthday, yeah. Joaquin. Some teams that you've been on probably could use you right now. But that's going to do it for this episode of In the Pen. If you're looking to interact with us, as always, you can find the show on Twitter at In the Pen Pod. If you want to suggest a name for Name That Closer or ask general questions, you can hit up any of us up on Twitter. Do it individually. We don't want to give it away, but you find me on Twitter at Callen _ Elsliger. Rick, Jake, why don't you plug your Twitters as always and talk about any further work you got coming up.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at I am Rick Graham. Nothing new outside of the reliever ranks and the reliever ranks articles, as well as your closing time, hold up, and saves plus holds articles. Yeah, that's pretty much all we got going on here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got a pretty tame month of May. You can follow me at Jake Crumpler on Twitter. But outside of that, you know, just doing the weekly reliever ranks article and recording the weekend editions of the First Pitch podcast and also my personal podcast, Free Baseball. But if you just want to find all of my work, it's on crumplerbaseball.com.
A lot to look forward to this coming week. Hopefully we'll get some Liam Hendricks highlights and get him back into the fantasy baseball sphere. A lot of things to look forward to, and hopefully by next week we'll be talking about him and some of the other committees. Hopefully things get figured themselves out. Maybe we'll get AJ Puck back, and a lot more to look forward to. So thanks for tuning into this episode of In the Pen, and we'll catch you next week.